بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين، وصلى الله على محمد وآله الطاهرين الطيبين. We're talking about Kitab al-Tahara, and the subject at hand was wudu, tahara from hadath, the spiritual tahara. And in that discussion, we were talking about wudu. We arrived at this discussion: what invalidates wudu? There's seven things that are mentioned that would invalidate wudu. That have been mentioned in all risalas pretty much, and there's no difference of opinion amongst scholars regarding it. The first three deal with using the bathroom. Urinating, bowel movement, and passing gas, these invalidate the wudu. The fourth one is sleep. Sleeping, falling asleep completely. What they mention is that the ears should not hear when the person is asleep. And if we are doubtful whether this has happened or not, we consider our wudu valid. The fifth item that is mentioned is anything that would cause one to become unconscious, or they say to lose the intellect. The one that I mentioned, if one is put or is made unconscious, that's one of them. But also, if one, you have people that sometimes they're not always in a state where you could call them psycho or crazy, but sometimes it would go into that state. Also, if a person becomes drunk. The sixth item that has been mentioned is istihadha. We will talk about istihadha very briefly. There's three types. Two of them would invalidate the wudu. They would cause one to have to perform wudu, the mutawassita and the qalila. We'll explain that terminology in the discussion of istihadha. The last one that is mentioned is also janaba. Janaba invalidates the wudu. Of course, to get rid of janaba, we'll say that we would have to perform a ghusl, but it also invalidates the wudu. In other words, the other things that we will say, it's been translated, the things that would cause ghusl to become wajib, or it's translated as the major ablution. I don't know if that's a good translation or not, but anyhow. The other ones, like haydh, istihadatul kathira, and ghuslu mas al mayyit, according to at least some of the maraja, it is not considered to invalidate the wudu. Ghusl is wajib, but wudu is not invalidated with that. So one can perform the wudu before the ghusl as well in those. Inshallah, we'll explain that. So these are the seven items that invalidate the wudu. The next discussion we have in the discussion of wudu, and as a reminder, as we said before, we're going over an overview of the ahkam, mainly trying to mention the ones that are more applicable, that need a little more explanation, and then we'll leave the rest of the details for question and answer. What is wudu wajib for? What do we need to perform wudu for? What we have are a few items that we would have to make wudu for in order for the action to be valid. One is prayer, and what deals with prayer, obviously. Tawaf, when we go to Hajj, inshallah, or for Umrah, the tawaf that is wajib, the wajib tawaf, the condition for it is tahara. So we need to have wudu for that. Touching the Holy Quran, the words the verses, whether it's in the Quran, okay, we have a book called the Holy Quran, or we find it in another book, but there's a verse quoted there. Touching that is not allowed without wudu. The names of Allah, okay, the word Allah in Arabic or in other languages, God, okay, whether you write Allah with English letters or Arabic letters, or you write the word God in the English language, or what the equivalent of God is, or Allah is, any other language, touching that without wudu is not allowed. About the names of the prophets and the ma'sumeen, according to Ayatollah Khamenei's fatwa, it is an obligatory precaution not to touch them without wudu. There's a difference of opinion on that. That's why I emphasize it. For the names of the Ahlul Bayt, the prophets, it is an obligatory precaution to have wudu when touching them. About the names of Allah, other than the word God and Allah, there are names that are considered specific to Allah. Nobody else can have those names. It only refers to Allah, like Ar-Rahman. Okay, the likes of Ar-Rahman, we're not allowed to touch without wudu either. Little explanation here for those who don't know, since we said touching the names of the ma'sumeen and the prophets without wudu is haram based on obligatory precaution. Obligatory precaution means the marja does not have a fatwa there. Since we are supposed to follow the fatwa of the most knowledgeable, if the marja that is we've considered most knowledgeable does not have a fatwa, we can go to the next most knowledgeable marja and see if they have a fatwa on the issue. If they do, we have to follow that, unless we want to go with the obligatory precaution of the marja that we have identified as most knowledgeable. So these are the items that wudu becomes wajib on. That's the end of the discussion, the overview of wudu. As part of the discussion of hadath or tahara min al-hadath, purifying or the spiritual purification, the second topic we have is ghusl. What are the items that ghusl becomes wajib for? Six are mentioned. The first is janabah. I'm just giving you the words and then we'll explain them. Janabah, haydh or menstruation, nifas, we'll explain that, al-istihadha, massul mayyit, touching a dead body of a human being, and the last one is maut, when a person dies, there's three ghusls that are going to become wajib. We have to give three ghusls to the mayyit. Now, how is the ghusl performed before getting into the explaining what makes ghusl wajib? Ghusl is performed, there's a difference of opinion between Ayatollah Sistani and Ayatollah Khamenei, and of course many other maraja also have Ayatollah Khamenei's view about how the ghusl has got to be performed. Based on Ayatollah Khamenei's fatwa, you've got to wash the head and neck first, and then the right side of the body completely, and then the left side of the body. Ayatollah Sistani says after the head and neck, the rest of the body, there's no order. You can wash the whole body, wash the left side first. Doesn't make a difference. So it's the head and neck, and then the right side, and then the left side. Recite the salawat, please. Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad. This is called ghuslu tartibi. There's a ghuslu al-irtimasi. I won't get to the details because of the shortage in time. But the simpler one, the easy one to say, is just if one dives into the water with the intention of ghusl, then it's going to count as ghusl. That is called irtimasi. But the one that we described was the tartibi. The conditions for the validity of the ghusl are a few. One is the niyyah and the intention that we mentioned, but the other conditions that were mentioned in wudu apply. The intention we mentioned and a few other ones. I won't repeat them. Intention, the water being tahir, the water being mutlaq, the water being mubah. All these were conditions. I won't repeat that. But two of the conditions that we had in wudu don't apply to ghusl. One of those conditions is that in wudu we had to wash from top to bottom. Okay. In ghusl we don't have to do that. We can go from bottom to top. But it's better to go from top to bottom, but we don't have to. That's number one. And the second one is that it is not a condition to observe muwalat. Okay, you can do the first part of the ghusl, the head and neck, wash that, and then leave it 2 hours later, wash the right side, and then the left side. You don't have to do it right after the other one. Now, this is how the ghusl is performed. What are the causes of ghusl? We'll talk about each of them independently, what they mean, and also what the rulings are for a person that is in that state, because the rulings differ. The first one is janaba. I don't think there's an English equivalent for janaba, but it basically, if there's a discharge of semen or intercourse, a person will be in the state of janaba. Okay. Any of these two, if they occur, then a person is in the state of janaba. Whether male or female, it doesn't make a difference. When one becomes junub, before ghuslul janaba, there are certain rulings that apply to them. One is they can't perform salat. You need to perform ghuslul janaba in order to be able to perform salat, prayer. Also for tawaf, just like wudu, we can't, you know, tahara is something that is a condition for tawaf. We can't perform tawaf without tahara. So if we're in the state of janaba, we can't perform tawaf. We have to perform the wudu, the ghusl first. But an additional point that we have here is that in order for fasting to be valid, in order for sawm to be valid, we've got to perform ghusl al-janaba. And it doesn't count if we don't perform ghusl al-janaba. In the sense that if one is in the state of janaba before fajr time, and they are awake, okay, they are up, and they don't perform ghusl al-janaba before the time of salat comes in, before the time of fajr comes in, whether they purposely didn't do it and they were aware they're in the state of janaba, or they forgot they're in the state of janaba and the fajr time came, that fast is not going to be valid. Of course, if they didn't know they're in the state of janaba, that fast will be valid. But if they don't, if they do know, they purposely don't make ghusl janaba, or they've forgotten that they were in the state of janaba, they didn't perform ghusl janaba, that fast is not going to count. They will have to repeat it. Also, during the fast, if someone intentionally does something to make themselves junub, they purposely do something to discharge semen, or they perform the act of intercourse, then the fast is going to become invalid. But if it's unintentionally done, in the sense that ihtilam, as they call it, or in the English language we would call it a wet dream, that is not going to cause the fast to become invalid. Now, what is haram on a person that is in the state of janaba? There's about seven things that have been mentioned. One is the same as wudu. We can't touch the verses of the Holy Quran or the names of Allah with the explanations that we gave there. And also the names of the ma'sumin as an obligatory precaution. The next ruling is there's two masjids that if we are in the state of janaba, we're not allowed to even enter them at all. And that is Masjid al-Haram and Masjid al-Nabi. The other masajid, we are allowed to enter them, but we cannot stay in them. What they say is that if one wants to enter another masjid, to cross through it, okay, or to go and pick something up from the masjid, one is allowed to enter it. You go in, you pick up what you need to pick up and come back out without stopping. But going in there and staying there and sitting down, it is not allowed for the other masajid. But the two masjids that we mentioned, entering them even to go pick something up or to go from one door to the other door and just cross through the masjid, that is not allowed for Masjid al-Nabi and Masjid al-Haram. The next of the muharramat for a junub is to put something in the masjid. Okay. If one wants to go in the masjid and put something in there, that is haram. You can't do that. Picking something up is okay, but putting something there is not okay. And also we can't, like if we can't stand outside the masjid and throw a backpack in the masjid. Nothing. You can't put anything in the masjid in the state of janaba. Whether you go inside to put it there or you throw it in from the outside. And by the way, before I go on, masjid, what we mean by masjid is not just an area that we pray in. Okay, masjid has got very specific rulings. In order for a building to be masjid, there's a special procedure that we need to go through. The next of the muharramat on a junub is, according to Ayatollah Khamenei, there's a difference of opinion. There are four surahs in the Holy Quran that they contain a verse, that verse has got an obligatory sujood. Okay? If you look at the Qur'ans that are available, you see a lot of instances, more than four, that have a sign that you need to perform sajda. But not all of those are wajib sujoods. There's only four instances where sajda is wajib. One is in surah, they call it Hamim sajda. Or actually surah to sajda itself, we call it surah sajda in the current prince, it's called Sajda. We have a Surah Sajda that has a wajib Sajda. Surah Fussilat has got a wajib Sajda. Surah Najm has got a wajib Sajda. And Surah Alaq has a wajib Sajda. According to Ayatollah Khamenei, reciting the verse that has a wajib Sajda is not allowed in the state of Janabah. Okay. But the other parts of that Surah, it is not haram, although it's makruh generally for a person in the state of Janabah to read and recite more than seven verses of the Holy Qur'an. And of course, kiraha, and when we say it's makruh to recite the verses of the Holy Qur'an, it means it's less mustahab. Okay. So if we have an option of performing ghusl, or if we can't perform ghusl, to perform tayammum instead of it, and then recite the Holy Qur'an, we should leave it until after the ghusl, instead of taking our time and reciting the Qur'an before performing that ghusl. But it doesn't mean that if we don't have water available, we can't make ghusl right now, and we want to recite the Holy Qur'an, that we don't do that. One point that is related to this ghusl and all of the other ghusl, sometimes more than one ghusl is wajib on us. For example, if we've touched a dead body and we've become junub, we have two ghusls that are wajib on us. In this case, do we have to perform two ghusls, one for the janabah and the other for masul mayyit? Or, as we will say, if one becomes junub in one way, okay, there's a discharge of semen, and then there's intercourse, or vice versa, or there's more than once, or we touch a dead corpse more than one time, five times, or five different corpses, do we need to perform one more than one ghusl or not? According to the fatwa of Ayatollah Khamenei, one ghusl will count. We don't have to perform any more than one ghusl. But in the case where it's different ghusl, okay, we gave the example of touching a dead corpse more than one time. Okay, in that case, for sure, only one ghusl is necessary. You make the intention of ghusl masl mayyit, the ghusl for touching the dead body. And that is going to count for sure. But if it's two different types of ghusl, are we allowed to make one ghusl with the intention of both of them? Again, it is allowed. You just make the intention of all of the ghusl that are wajib on you. Or you make the intention, whatever ghusl is wajib on me, I'm making this ghusl for them. That is going to count. Also, if ghusl al-janaba is one of the ghusl that is wajib on you, if you only make the intention of ghusl al-janaba and don't even bring to mind the other ghusl that are wajib, it will count for the other ones as well, and one is going to be in the state of tahara afterwards. The next ghusl that we can only give an overview of some of the points, and I encourage brothers and sisters to go and learn the details of the ahkam, because we mentioned yesterday, because this is a very short session, we only have 5 days, 2 45-minute lectures in each. We're not going to get to go over the details of every section. I'm giving an overview so we get an idea. It will open up our minds. So then we start thinking of the questions we have, then we refer to the Risala or the office of the Marja that we are following to get some of the details. And also in the question and answer, we'll try to deal with as many details as we can. But especially the ahkam that I was just discussing and the ones that I am about to discuss, the ahkam of janabah, the ahkam of menstruation and istihadha and nifas are ahkam that usually people feel shy to go and ask or to send emails, but it's a responsibility. That's not going to be an excuse for us on the day of judgment that, you know, we missed our prayers, we didn't perform them correctly, or our fast, we didn't perform them correctly because we felt shy to go and ask the question regarding it. The ghusl after ghusl al-janaba that we talk about is the ghusl al-hayf. Okay, there's a lot of details in this, and it only applies to sisters. I'm just going to give an overview of some of the overviews, and we'll get to the next ghusls. Recite the salawat, please.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad.
There are signs for distinguishing between ghusl the bleeding that is considered hayd and istihadha. Those signs need to be known. Other than the sign, there's a couple of conditions for the blood to be considered hayd. One is that it continues for at least 3 days non-stop, and the other is that it does not go beyond 10 days. If it goes beyond 10 days, there's special rulings that apply. Beyond 10 days is definitely not going to be considered hayd. And also between two hayd, through two menstruations, there's going to be at least 10 days that there's no menstruation. If the blood continues, then that is not going to be considered as menstruation. Before I go on, let me mention this point as well. What we consider, what we talk about, hayd and menstruation, is not the scientific, necessarily the scientific menstruation. There are certain signs in the Islamic law that have been mentioned. If the blood has got those signs, it is considered hayd, and the rulings apply. If it doesn't have those conditions, then the rulings do not apply. Those are the general conditions for hayd to be considered hayd. There are a lot of details, as I said. This is just an overview to get people thinking. The other thing is that when do the rulings apply? What are the rulings if it goes beyond 10 days? They've categorized women based on their menstruation into a few different categories. One is Dhatul Aada, okay, an individual that has got a usual habit of the way menstruation happens, whether it's regarding the time of it or the number of days that it continues. Each of them has got a category. One that it's a particular day of the month that it begins, but the days are not usually or always the same, the number of days that it continues. Sometimes it's only the number of days that continues. That is usually the case, that every month it's the same number of days, but when it starts, it's not the same every month. And sometimes it is both. Each of those is a category, but the rulings are going to be different. There's also a mubtada'a, an individual that it's the first time that they're having that menstruation. There's rulings that apply to that. Mudhtariba, someone that maybe they had a particular norm for their monthly menstruation, but that is distorted. Like 1 month, the timing is not the same, and also the number of days that it continues is not the same. This is called mudhtariba. And nasiyah is the individual who has forgotten what that norm was, whether the norm was regarding the day that it begins or the number of days that it continues for. It is very important to learn these laws, get to the details of them and see where they apply, where they don't. The laws are very, very different. That's all I would like to discuss on ghusl al-hayd. The next ghusl that we have is nifas. It also only applies to sisters. The definition of it, this is similar to menstruation, but it is after childbirth. There are differences. For example, it doesn't have to necessarily continue for at least 3 days. It does have the quality or the condition that it doesn't go beyond 10 days, but it's still different. There's a lot of details there. Refer to that. But the rulings, the other rulings that apply to the ha'id apply to the nufasa as well. So these were, that was the definition of what hayd is and also what nifas is very briefly. As I said, nifas is very similar, but there are slight differences. What are the rulings that apply to a person that is in the state of menstruation? Anything that is haram on a junub that we talked about in the janabah, they apply to an individual who's in the state of hayd and menstruation as well. There's another haram, and that is that they would not be, it is haram to have intercourse during that period of time. The other thing is that divorce does not count during that time, during menstruation. Those were the rulings that apply to hayd and nifas. The next type of ghusl that we have is called istihadha. Okay. Basically, I think at least some forms of it are called spottings, but any form of bleeding that is not considered hayd or nifas is considered istihadha, has the rulings of istihadha. There are three categories of, there are three types of istihadha: qalila, mutawassita, and kathira. I rather not describe what they are, but it's a definite must that the sisters go and read up on this and see the differences. But the rulings that apply to each of them, the qalila is basically istihadatul qalila is just makes wudu wajib for the prayers. It doesn't cause anything else. It's only a wudu. So it's just like the other things that invalidate the wudu, like falling asleep. This is also like them. Of course, there are special rulings that do not apply to like sleeping and the likes of that, that apply here. We'd have to refer to that. For the mutawassita, the ruling is that there's only one ghusl that is necessary for one day. The first time that the individual has got istihadatul mutawassita, for the first prayer they have to perform the ghusl. But for the other prayers during that day, they don't have to perform it. For example, if the istihadatul mutawassita starts before Fajr time for the Fajr prayer, or during Fajr time before I have performed Fajr, I have to perform one ghusl, and then for the rest of the day, if it continues, then I only have to make wudu for the next prayers. If it happens after the Fajr time, before Dhuhr time, then I have to perform one ghusl for the Dhuhr and Asr prayers, but not for the Maghrib and Isha, and so on and so forth. But the next day, if it still continues, I have to do another ghusl for the following day's prayers. For the kathira, the ruling is that basically at least three ghusls are wajib. At least. For the Fajr prayer, one ghusl is wajib. For the Dhuhr and Asr, if we do them right after one another without having a substantial gap between them, one ghusl is necessary. For Maghrib and Isha also, one ghusl is necessary if there's no, if we don't separate between them. The other thing is that these ghusl are only wajib for the prayer, for the fasting. The validity of the fast does not depend on the ghusl or the wudu. The next topic we find in Kitab al-Tahara, in because it talks about ghuslul mayyit, they start to discuss all the rulings regarding the mayyit. When a person passes away, there are certain laws that apply. We've got to perform ghusl on them. There's three ghusl that are wajib. After the ghusl are done, we've got to do something called hunut, which is using camphor and rubbing it on the parts of sajda, like the forehead, the palms of the hands, the knees, and the toes. After that, we've got to put the deceased person in the kafan. Then there's salatul mayyit, performing a prayer over the mayyit, and afterwards burying them. Each of these have got very detailed rulings. Because it's not something that we would stick to our minds, and it's not something that we would deal with on a daily basis, I'm going to skip this. The only thing that I will mention regarding it is for those who buy kafan from the Middle East. Okay. When you buy it, go try it on, or try it on whoever is or you're buying it for. Okay, I had to do the kafan on an individual in California. They brought a kafan, but it was too short. Okay, and if it's too short, then it's not going to count. You're going to have to find another kafan. And it was a disaster how we had to fix that up and manage that. But anyway, just make sure if it's for yourself, try it on. If it's for whoever else, make sure it fits them. All the three wajib parts. If the mustahab parts don't fit, that's fine. But the wajib parts have got to fit. The last ghusl that we have of the wajib ghusl is touching a dead corpse. Touching the body of an individual who has died after the body has become cold. Okay, if it's still warm, they just died, their soul just left the body, touching it is not going to cause this ghusl. Okay. After the body becomes cold, the ghusl becomes wajib if we touch it. And it doesn't make a difference which part of the body we touch, even if it's the nails, it will count. The only place where it doesn't count is the hair. If we touch the hair of a person who's died, the hair is not going to cause us to have to perform ghusl masil mayyit. But the other body parts, if we touch, the body is cold, we would have to perform ghusl masil mayyit. Whether that body belongs to a Muslim, a non-Muslim, a very pious person, doesn't make a difference. As soon as the body is cold, if we touch it, we would have to perform ghusl masil mayyit. Unless we finish the process of the ghusl, which only applies to a Muslim body, obviously, because there's no ghusl for a non-Muslim body. A Muslim, after we finish three ghusl, once the third one is finished, then we've got to, or we are allowed to, touch the body without having to perform ghusl masil mayyit. By the way, it's not haram to touch it. The only thing is, if we do touch it, then we have to perform ghusl masil mayyit. Another point that is worth mentioning, and it's important to know for those who don't already know it: a human being is also najis if we die, or when we die before the ghusl are performed, the body is also najis. Okay, not only do we have to perform ghusl masil mayyit, but if our hands are wet and we touch the body, then it is najis. We would have to wash our hands. Unless we perform the ghusl on the dead body, once the ghusl is done, then we would be able to touch the body without having to wash our hands, without becoming najis. Okay, I think our time is up and we finished the discussion of ghusl. Recite the salawat and then we'll be ready for questions, inshallah.
Muhammad.
Yes?
Just a clarification on your last point, which I guess I didn't quite understand. So the body, dead body before Muslim has been performed is najis.
Yes.
But, and so if you touch it with if your hands are wet and you touch it, you have to wash your hands.
That's right.
Okay, and then you still would have to perform ghusl for yourself.
That's right.
But isn't that redundant? Or I guess maybe that's what I'm wondering, is you still have to do both, wash your hands and do ghusl, or if you do ghusl by itself, that takes care of everything.
No, the thing is, if your hand is wet, okay, If it's najis, you can't perform ghusl without making that tahir. Okay. So it makes it najis as well. So if I touch the dead body with a wet hand, when I want to make ghusl, I have to wash my hand first and then perform the ghusl. Yes.
If somebody touches it and then they touch, you know how they are touching someone else.
Yeah.
Does it be like
najasa transfers if my hands are wet, and somebody touches my hand, and I had touched the dead corpse with wet hands, then najasa transfer. But ghusl masil mayyit doesn't become wajib on them. No. Yes. Yes. Any of the salah has the description. Any of the Islamic laws books, yes. Sisters, yes?
I have a question regarding being unconscious.
Mm-hmm.
That this is a requirement for tahara. Okay, what point does a person not have to perform salat anymore? Because let's say you end up in a coma for like a month or 2 months.
Mm-hmm. First of all, during that period of time where the person is unconscious, they definitely don't have any taklif. Okay, so prayer is not wajib on them during that time. Of course, we'll discuss this in the discussion of prayer, inshallah. But prayer is not wajib on them, so we don't have to perform any wudu. And even if we could perform wudu on them, it doesn't count because they need to be conscious. After they are back, inshallah, if they live through the coma and they are conscious again, do they have to make up the prayers? The prayers that they were conscious for an amount of time that they would have been able to perform prayer, but they didn't, it would be a wajib for them to make those up. But for the prayers that they were out completely throughout the time, okay, I'm pretty sure they wouldn't have to make that up, but I'll check it for you just to make sure. Inshallah. One of you. Yes.
The spelling G-O-D. How do you handle money if you're in this problem? How do you handle money?
Just don't touch the part where it has the name of God. That's it. The rest of the paper, we can touch it. That just that word, we can't touch. Touching where you know you're touching the name of God, yeah, it's haram to touch that. Yeah, you have to be careful. Yeah. Okay. One of you. Okay, go ahead.
Touching the Quran. Yeah. Once you become in that state, is it touching the actual script or can
yes,
touch
yes.
the border?
It's the touching, as I said in answering the sister too. When we say the name of Allah or the Quran, we mean the exact words, okay, the script, the writing, not the borders, not the cover, none of that. Only the words themselves, that's haram to touch.
And regarding the one's head and neck, are they one?
Yes, head and neck is one.
So while you're washing your head, if the water reaches the neck, you don't have to wash the neck? Or do you have to wash each specific one?
What do you mean by that?
Like if I'm in a shower and I'm washing my head, while I'm washing my head, the water's already reached my neck, and my neck's been washed.
How would that not count as washing the neck? My point is, when we are performing the ghusl, okay, it's not like washing means that you're using your hands to like tap your body, okay. The point is that you make sure water gets to the areas where you need to wash, okay. So if I'm under the shower and the water is coming down, I just move my head around a couple of times and I make sure in my ears it's all covered and just, you know, put a little bit of pressure on my hair to make sure the water has gotten to my scalp and...
With the names of Allah or the prophets, is it haram to throw away? And what about the Quran? And if it's haram, how do we, what's the best way to?
Recycling it is going to be okay, but throwing it away in the garbage can, that's not going to be allowed. Burning it is also not allowed. We can't do that.
Shredding it.
Shredding it is fine. It's not disrespect. You shred it and then you recycle it. Yeah, it's fine. Yes, one of you. No, only a human being, body of a human being. Of course, it's najis, but to have to perform ghusl masal mayyit, no, it's only a human body. No, no. Gloves, your skin, your body has to touch that body. Okay, if something is between, you don't have to.
And then, if after 10 days of nifas, what is it considered with the woman's
skin? Istihada.
And then it should be treated that way.
That's right, yeah. Yeah?
So, just to recap, if you touch a dead body, that has a human body, that has ghusl has been done on.
Yeah.
You don't become najis.
You don't become najis and you don't have to perform ghusl masal.
The other thing is, in the Bible, if it says the word God in English or even Arabic, is it treated the same thing as the Quran?
See, there are three different rulings. Each of them has got its own law. The mawdu', the subject of the ruling is different. One of them is the Quran, the script of the Quran. Okay, the Bible is definitely not the script of the Quran, so it's okay to touch it. But the same ruling applies to a different subject, and that is the name of God anywhere, whether you find it on money, in the Bible, whatever language, according to Ayatollah Khamenei, whatever language it is, okay, too, you can't touch it. Of course, God with a capital G, okay, because if it doesn't have a capital G, it's like the word ilah in Arabic. It's not Allah, it's not the name that is referring to God. So in English, we would have it with a capital G. That touching that is not going to be allowed. Yes.
What if the dead body is in pieces?
What if the dead body is?
Is in pieces.
The body parts of a deceased person, if they are like the body is mutilated, or touching them, if the body is mutilated after the death, touching any part of the body has got the same ruling, both in terms of najasa and having to perform ghusl. But if someone that's alive, their finger is cut off, or some a part of their body is cut off. Okay, touching that, it depends. First of all, in terms of its najasa, it doesn't make a difference. That whatever it separates, whatever is cut off, except for the skin that you know comes off itself. But you know, if something is cut off, that is najis. Okay, a living part of us that is cut off is najis. If we touch it with wet hands, that's going to make us najis. We would have to wash our hands. But in terms of having to perform ghusl masil mayyit, only if it's a combination of flesh and bone, we would have to perform ghusl masil mayyit. So if somebody's finger is cut off, after it gets cold, you touch it, then it has that ruling. But if it's just flesh or just bone, like a person, you find some bones, okay, you dig up some bones, touching them is not going to cause ghusl masil mayyit. Sorry, before I continue, if we dig up a body, okay, because the bones belong to the body that it, after it deceased, it's left its flesh, okay, we'd have to do masl mayit. I meant, like, if we find, like, a bone of a person that we know who was cut off, you know, while they were alive, yes.
Does the rulings apply for the shaheed?
The rulings don't apply for the shaheed, but the definition of a shaheed, what do we mean by shaheed? If someone dies in a terrorist attack in the city, that's not the shaheed that we're talking about. They do have the rewards of a shaheed, but the ruling of shaheed in this case doesn't apply to them. It would have to be in a battlefield, and they died in the battlefield. That's when they have this ruling. Yes?
I have a question. Maybe I missed it because I came late, but the scripts of we can't touch without wudu.
That's right.
What about the du'as of Aimma, like Sahifa Sajadia or Du'a Kamal?
Oh, it's fine. Except for the names of Allah, then we can touch them.
And the other question about for the ghusl.
Mm-hmm.
A person who has long hair doing ghusl.
Mm-hmm.
Like they say, you know, you have to... for your hair, you need to make sure that they are, you know, if you have a long hair,
mm-hmm.
you try to don't leave the hair out. You know, you have to make sure that they are
Make sure all the hair is washed too, right?
Right. And you just leave the hair out, or you kind of tie them or something to take all the water out? Is it necessary to do that?
No, there's no need to take the water out. Okay. It needs to be washed. Okay. Taking the water out, that can happen after the shower. But during the shower, we just need to make sure, based on the fatwa, I'm trying to find Ayatollah Khamenei's fatwa right now, because there's a difference of opinion whether you need to wash the hair that is long at all or you don't have to. I know Ayatollah Sistani's fatwa is that you don't have to. Okay, according to Ayatollah Khamenei, it's an ihtiyat wajib to wash the hair. That means that you can go to the next most knowledgeable, and if you consider that to be Ayatollah Sistani, then you don't have to wash the hair. And of course, what we mean by hair is long hair, not like the hair of the hands or the beard or the hair like men usually keep it short. We'd have to wash the hair. But if it's long, we don't have to wash. It's only an ihtiyat wajib according to Ayatollah Khamenei's fatwa that we would have to wash.
That skin is not considered.
According to Ayatollah Khamenei, the way he puts it is that if a skin comes off itself, that is not najis. So if you have like dead skin on the feet that is attached and it's pretty tough and you cut it or you file it off or whatever, that would be considered najis based on that statement there.
That skin would be considered
najis, yes.
So when is it not najis?
If it's like, if you got chapped lips and the skin comes off, or the, it comes off meaning that not necessarily that it comes off by itself. If you touch it, then it becomes najis. No. If it's ready to come off, it's dead and it's not stuck onto or attached to the body. Okay. If you like the corners of our side our fingernails, that the skin that is there, if we have thick skin there, if we decide to like pull it off or bite it off, that would be najis. Yeah.
And does it make the wudu batil?
No, it doesn't make the wudu batil, but it makes, if you bite it off, then it makes your mouth najis.
Yeah.
Is that a hand up for a question? Sorry, I didn't. Yeah. French would also, in any language, whether it's French, English, or any other language, would have to we would have to have wudu or any type of tahara, whether it's ghusl or wudu, to be able to touch it.
What if you don't know?
If you don't know, then you don't know. Only if you know that's the name of God. So if you see something, some language that you don't understand, you can touch it all you want. Yes? If it is considered touching the name of God by the common view, then yes, it would be haram to touch it without wudu or ghusl. But I would strongly doubt if that's considered touching the name of God. You know, it's, what is that? The question about was about touching the name of God or the Quran on the computer screen. What is the criteria for a masjid? It's got to be made waqf as a masjid. Yes. If you just buy a center, okay, and there's a prayer hall there, and everyone comes and prays, and it belongs to this individual, then that's not a masjid. Masjid has got to be, there's a waqf, there's a process of waqf. You need to make it waqf as a masjid.
That's the issue with the skin. Is that a fatwa or a ihtiyat wajib?
The issue with the skin is a fatwa. InshaAllah. You say the salawat, please.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad.
Unfortunately, right now, there's only the istifta'at. It's a tough process of finding the fatwas. That's why it takes me like 2.5 hours to just present the 20 minutes that I quickly go through. You have to go through Tahrir al-Wasila of Imam Khomeini, and then see if there's any istifta whether on the site or in Ajwabatul Istiftaat, because there's three sets of question and answers that you find on the site. Ajwabatul Istiftaat, or the question and answers, or what do they call it? Inquiries on Islamic law, or whatever it's called in English. Anyhow, that's one set of questions. Then they have the frequently asked questions and the newly asked questions. You have to check all three of them to see if they, if he has a fatwa on that issue. If not, then whatever you find in Tahrir al-Wasila is going to be his, what you follow. Yeah.
Website of Wilaya.org, is there?
I don't know. Leader.ir is his website, official website of Qom.
Even if we type that, that goes to leader.ir. So that is his official
Yes,
website.
That's his official website run from Qom. Yeah. Yes?
In like when you have to wash your head, can you dip it in the whole water?
Yeah. You can. The point is that you wash that body part, the head and the neck. You can, if you dip it in the pool, and then the right side, and then the left side. Yeah.
And like just go in the pool, and then you have like to wash my head, uh-huh. And automatically you need to wash the right side and the left side.
You can do that, but the easier way is when you're in the pool, just make the intention of ghusl and dip yourself the entire body in water and just move around. And that's it. You would have to make ghusl masl mayyit.
Sallallahu ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad.
Allahumma salli